All right, I'm here. I am. Right, Mary, thanks. Hello, old friend. How are you? I'm doing well, and again, the automatic response is every time I talk to you, I keep saying I'm not going to say how are you because I know what the response is, but I always do. Still, perfect. You know what? That's interesting. Quite a bit, I think. Although at times I'm still frustrated that I don't think I'm accomplishing, enough from a shift in a widening perspective, but I want to talk to you about some of that stuff today. Actually, if I had to put a theme on today's session, I'd almost entitle it Tying Up Loose Ends because I've been kind of paying attention to your work and what you've been telling us for, 13, 14 years now. And there's certain things that still, in my conceptualization, are what I would call loose ends, and I'd like to chat with you about some of those. As we talk about the young ones in this point of the shift and there's more self-directing and kind of coming in and objectifying the shift, a lot of young kids in this day and age play video games. Obviously, the technology exists now that they can play these really cool video games that didn't exist, for example, when I was a child. So a lot of parents were looking at it thinking, okay, well, me in particular, I'm looking at it thinking, this is interesting because I'm on them constantly saying, go outside, use your physical body, use your avatar, jump, run, play, do all these things. You came to Earth to have these physical adventures instead of sitting on a couch playing video games for hours and hours and hours. And part of me thinks it's not efficient for the shift, but I'm wondering if this is just a part of the shift and this is why so many of these young kids are spending so much time with virtual reality games instead of real world. Function, I would call it.
I would express it very much is a part of this shift, or I would express that the reason that these video games are so very popular and that so many young individuals are interested and engaged with them is that they are almost mirror images of reality.
Yeah.
I would express that the creation of these video games is a tremendous step forward in relation to this shift. For it is a physical manifestation reflecting what reality actually is.
Yeah, I was thinking that myself.
Your reality is so much more similar to a video game than you realize. You are the avatars.
Right. That's kind of what I was thinking, that I should relax my thoughts about this because it is a way that you can pop in one game and be slaying dragons as an example, and pop in another game and be racing a car, and pop in another game and be on a skateboard or something. And it's almost like interacting with various focuses and shifting from one aspect to another or from one focus to another and having different experiences.
Beyond moving from one focus to another, it also is, in a manner of speaking, teaching them in a very different capacity how to manipulate their reality. That their reality, in what you view as real reality,
Right.
same as these games. And in that, in mastering the games, they also generate a greater objective understanding of how they manipulate within physical reality and incorporate more of an allowance of their creativity to be interacting with their physical reality, for they actually view it with more possibilities than many of you have that did not have this addition to your reality.
That's interesting. And on the same line of questioning, I wanted to ask you about the Harry Potter stories. You've mentioned it in a few sessions in the past, and this Harry Potter phenomenon, I'll call it, is something that's huge. I work at a place where we've obviously, you know, physically manifested a Harry Potter expression, a mirror image of what people's imaginations perhaps were from the books and from the movies. And it's just hugely popular with certainly young people, but even old people. So a couple questions on Harry Potter. One question is, why is it so popular? And then I really wanted to talk to you a little bit about J.K. Rowling, who's the writer of this. You mentioned before that in some masterworks, the artist infuses a bit of self, but I also recall that in this particular case, you mentioning something where J.K. Rowling, the author, may have tapped into another dimension and is kind of pulling this story or these characters or this information directly. There's got to be some translation involved, but directly from another dimension. So I'm curious.
That is correct. The popularity of it is expressed twofold. One is the tremendous draw to magic. I would express that you as humans have always, from the dawn of your existence, you have always been exceptionally drawn to magic. For magic is merely the actions that you deem to be impossible, but are not impossible. That there is the remainder of an innate knowing in each of you, regardless of your evolution, regardless of your development of structure in your reality, there is that innate knowing that magic is possible, and in that it is fun and exciting, and it presents the possibility of no limits. And you as a species have expressed from the onset that attraction to no limits. How can you move your reality farther and farther and farther and push every boundary and fit into a physical reality everything that is possible? I would express, as I have previously, in relation to your physical dimension, you incorporate one of the most complex physical realities, and for that very reason, that you have an insatiable curiosity of what more you can insert into a physical reality that is an expression of consciousness, and you do it continuously. You are very creative and very inventive. All of your inventions are reflections of consciousness and what you are. Your internet and how it has advanced your communication, but not only your communication, your knowledge, your interactions. It has pushed boundaries that were once very strong and now are very thin. And in that, it is a reflection that also there is no limit to what you can do and what you can know and what you can express. Your video games, they are never ending in what you can do with them.
Yeah.
Even one particular game that may incorporate several levels, even in mastering all of the levels, you can move to another game in which you challenge yourself more. Therefore, it is never ending.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The possibility endless. In relation to this author and these particular stories, that is the most significant draw, is the element of magic, and that it is couched in a very human expression. That although there is a distinction between magical humans and non-magical humans, and that there are other magical beings, the stories are couched in the setting and the central aspect of the human factor. Therefore, they encourage, once again, the human element of no limitations. What you can imagine, you can do. And that reality can be magic.
Yeah.
As to the author herself, yes, I would reiterate that what she has done is she has allowed herself an openness and has tapped into another reality, another dimension, and has allowed that to flow in a very creative, easy form, in which she has allowed that flow through her and has allowed it to inspire her in her own creativity, and therefore mingling or meshing her own creativity and imaginativeness with the tapping into the other reality, it has allowed her to be considerably successful in her presentment of her writing.
So I'm curious, the central character, for example, or the central characters of Harry and Hermione, would that translate be into some actual individuals that are part of that other dimension, or is that really part of her imagination kind of creating the characters and inserting them into the backdrop of the dimension and the different elements that are contained within that dimension?
What I would express, as I have previously, in relation to any writer that is tapping into other dimensional expressions, is a combination. The characters are based upon what you would term to be archetypes.
Yeah.
They're not actual singular individuals. The author, in their imaginative and creative expression, translates that into specific characters and assigns them specific personalities and qualities. The personality types and the qualities are definitely expressed in the other dimension, but they are archetypal. They are not an actual individual.
Yeah.
Therefore, some individuals in this reality have expressed the questions in relation to these archetypes and have identified that they perhaps incorporate other focuses in some of these other dimensions. And they may express the question, would I be this character? Now, that being translated, it is not that they incorporate the focus of that individual in another dimension, but that they do incorporate a focus that is consistent with that archetype of that character.
Mm, interesting. And my impression of the author, J.K. Rowling, is in order to allow this openness, I got the impression that she's oriented intermediate. Is that correct?
You are correct.
And then I was trying to think of a family alignment for her, and I came up with aligned Sumafi, but I wanted to chat with you a little bit about that, because I do struggle at times to find, you know, family alignments and belonging to. In some cases, I can pick it out pretty readily for somebody that's really kind of leaning towards one family or another. But in this case, I thought my impression was Sumafi aligned.
Aligned, yes.
And then belonging to, I had no real impression here.
Sumari.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Great. It's along those same lines, my boss at work and former wife, I'm trying to get a sense of, well, first of all, because we've had such a long history together, I'm imagining we're connected in many ways and other focuses together.
Correct.
Yep. And I was curious to get a couple of things from you on her. My impression is she's thought-focused and common orientation.
Correct.
So those came pretty clearly to me. Her belonging to an aligned family is tougher for me. I can seem to rule things out more than rule in, but I wrote down belonging to, initially I wrote down to mold, but after kind of rereading it, I penciled in Sumafi belonging to.
Correct.
Oh, really? And then aligned, again, process of elimination, it's not a very strong feeling here, but I put aligned Gramada.
Correct.
So that would be the same orientation or the same family belonging in alignment as myself. And we are very compatible in many ways, so that doesn't surprise me. I'm very much into the least amount of distortion and the lack of distortion. I have been through my whole life. It's one of the reasons I'm drawn to your material so much. She is a little bit less so. I would imagine I seem to be a little bit more focused on the importance of the lack of distortion than she might, which is why I hesitated with the Sumafi initially.
would express that individuals express that in different capacities. That some individuals, the aspect of the least distortion would be more important to them and would be more of a draw. Another individual may be belonging to Samathi and may be expressing more attention to detail.
Interesting. Yeah, I would definitely see that with her. That's great.
That is merely that different individuals are expressing different qualities of that family. They do incorporate all of the qualities of the family, but one may be more predominant than another.
Yeah.
Another individual may be expressing in their most predominant quality, teaching.
Yep.
May not be as concerned with details or with distortion. That may be an underlying factor, but not the most important factor.
Well, interesting. Yeah, that's helpful. And then when, at the point, just trying to understand, you know, like I said, the theme of this is tying loose ends together, but probable selves. As I think about she and I, at the time of our divorce, I would imagine probable selves were created, at least certainly for me, based on your kind of teachings, for lack of a better word, of what might constitute a probable self being generated, you know, versus just walking across a room to get a drink of water, having a relationship break up, and the pain of that probably means to me that there was probable selves created at that point and perhaps others?
Yes, you are correct.
Yeah, interesting.
Probable realities, probable selves are generated in relation to the types of choices that alter your direction. I would not necessarily express it in the manner of more significant choices or less significant choices, for all choices are significant, and in actuality, all choices are choices. No choices are more significant than other choices. But some choices are altering of your direction. And when you generate choices that change your direction, you create probable realities and probable selves.
Mm-hmm. That kind of leads me into a question I wanted to ask. I love bouncing your information against anybody else, really. It's just kind of fun and interesting to kind of see how well it aligns. One person in particular is a channeled individual, Bashar, channeled by a guy named Daryl Anka, and he claims to be a future focus of Daryl in a, I don't know, he says it's a planet called Esasani, I believe it is, and he's from the future, and actually a lot of what he says, it kind of gels very nicely with what you say. He's still, to some degree, physically focused. One question I did have for you is he in this dimension or is he in another dimension? Bashar.
Both.
And that's another question, because he says that he's basically not only a time traveler, if you will, but a space traveler, and he talks about spaceships and things of that nature and being stationed above our planet, which is interesting, but I guess that would be one way to be in both dimensions, his home planet and also traveling about.
I would agree.
Okay. And he talks about time travel, and one of the again, tying up loose ends in the way I can help conceptualize these probable realities and probable selves and just consciousness in general, is he talks about time travel that his people that he can do, because they now understand that what you've telling us about being a different person kind of and blinking in and out, but the way he kind of describes it is that the way you can affect time travel, it's almost like you put a time stamp on a space-time continuum where you realize that you and whatever craft or whatever area you're occupying aren't the same as at another point in time. And you've told me that time is kind of stacked upon itself. So it seems like there's a bit of an address. If we wanted to figure out time travel, you'd almost have to put an extra piece of data, at least, on there that tells you I'm at this, you know, point in time. We'll use GPS longitude, latitude, particular dimension, but also have some kind of a time stamp and other identifiers that would allow you to move your vibrational frequency from one location, one time, to another location at another time.
I would agree. For your signature, so to speak, changes in relation to time. Therefore, it is also a matter of being aware of your signature in each time framework to step into that signature in whatever time framework you are transporting to.
And that's, again, trying to conceptualize this. You talk about vibrational frequencies, and even with Mary, some, you know, you talked about vibrational alignments and things that were coming, and Bashar talks about basically change your vibrational frequency or and you will change your world. Literally, you don't change the world, but change yourself, your vibrational tone, and the world around you will change. Things will be drawn to you, things will go away.
Very much agree.
Yeah.
I would very much agree. I express somewhat differently with individuals. I interpret different terminology for them. I would express that most individuals do not understand that statement.
Mm-hmm.
Or most individuals do not know what their vibrational quality is.
Right.
What a vibrational quality is, and therefore that is fault for many individuals to understand, but it is nonetheless correct. In this, you change your vibration or your vibrational quality by changing your energy.
Oh, interesting.
Therefore, in what you would term to be a practical manner, if you are wanting to change your vibrational quality, it is a matter of changing your energy expression. But that is what determines what your vibrational quality is. And in that, the manner in which you begin to change your energy is by very much paying attention to what you are doing. That is the simplest manner in which that can be expressed, as I have expressed. What you are thinking does not create your reality, and in that does not change what your vibrational quality is. What you are feeling is also not an indicator. It is not a gauge as to what type of energy energy you are expressing. It is a matter of being aware of what you are doing. And that, for most individuals, is somewhat challenging. For being aware of what you are doing is twofold. It is being aware of what you are physically doing and what you are expressing inwardly. That is what is the expression of what you are doing. And in that, in being so accustomed to not being present and not being now, most individuals are not objectively aware of what they are doing.
Yeah.
Or they're not directing their attention in what they are doing.
And I would say, and I struggle with this as well, being thought-focused, I'm in my head a lot, I'm thinking a lot, and that, even for me, I would put myself in that category of someone who's been trying to get better at being aware of what I'm doing, but I tend to do a lot of thinking, and I guess that being thought-focused, that's somewhat natural, but it, as you've mentioned before, you can overdo that thinking process and you've got to learn to turn it off.
Correct in both capacities. It is natural for you, but it is also important to remember what thinking is, that it is a mechanism to translate information into language.
Right.
And therefore, it is a matter of paying attention in the capacity of being aware of what mechanisms you are engaging and for what function. That thinking is a mechanism that performs the function of translating information into language. And it can only translate what it is offered. Therefore, this is the reason that so many individuals become caught in the loops of repeat thinking or incessant thinking. Or are not paying attention to what they are actually doing or what is occurring, and therefore they are not offering any new information to the thought mechanism, and therefore it begins processing old information. It reprocesses, and in that it repeats.
Yep.
And that is very similar to your older recordings in which you incorporated vinyl discs.
Mm-hmm.
And a disc generating a scratch.
Yep.
And the needle moves over the scratch and jumps. And repeats and repeats and repeats and repeats, or it gets stuck in the groove of the scratch.
Yep.
That mechanism generates a very similar action, that it is very dependent upon what you are paying attention to. Therefore, if you move your attention only to your thought mechanism, what you are doing is creating that scratch, that groove, in which it becomes stuck, and it repeats, repeats. For it is translating what you are paying attention to. If you are paying attention to the thought mechanism, what is it translating? What it has already expressed.
Yeah.
And this, your attention, is a very important factor of your existence, your movement, your accomplishments, what you do, and the single most important and influencing factor in relation to the simple formula of what you create. You always, in every moment of your existence, you always create more. It is merely a matter of what you create more of.
Yeah,
but
right.
You always are creating more, for this is your nature. This is the nature of consciousness. And therefore, you are always, in every moment, creating more. And your attention is the single most affecting influence in relation to what you create more of.
That is very helpful. And you know, it's interesting as you're saying that, I couldn't help but think, again, like how simple this is and how often you've been telling not only me, but others. And it's just an interesting thing. It sounds so simple, and I just don't understand why it's as difficult, I guess, for me to perceive as if I'm making progress on this front of widening, expanding, allowing the periphery to come in, because it sounds so simple when you tell me this over and over and over again. I wonder why you just don't do it.
It is not only allowing the periphery. It is allowing you to acknowledge what you are actually doing. But you do not even move your attention to what you are actually doing. And you, in many situations, are accomplishing much more than you think you are.
Yeah. I could agree with that.
But you are not acknowledging it.
Yeah, good point.
Or are not paying attention to what you are doing.
Right.
And this, the reason that it is so difficult is that you have been influenced and encouraged for generation after generation after generation after generation to move your attention to thinking. For you equate the intellectual with thinking. You equate logic, intellect, and intelligence with thinking.
Yeah, something jumped at me a few days ago reading your stuff, and you mentioned that the new way of knowing isn't necessarily an intellectual way, that as we widen, we'll know things in other ways. And I guess it's the subjective language and understanding more of what's coming through, and it's hard
and
for...
I will...
Go ahead.
And that your thought mechanisms already are, but will increasingly incorporate more and more difficulty in their translations. For you do not incorporate the language to accommodate it. And in that, a part of your evolution, a part of your widening, will also include expanding your language. For although you have 100 years, you have not even scratched the surface of how much is necessary for it to expand to accommodate what you know. You do not incorporate the words to translate what you know.
Yeah. And so, obviously, I'm thinking of what's the a good way to help that process along. If I wanted to learn another physical language, Spanish, French, I could go and learn this word kind of translates to that word, and the sentence structure is this or that. If I wanted to learn a computer language, I'd have to know what the zeros and ones all kind of coalesce into. I'm wondering if the subjective language is similar to a computer language, where it's a series of zeros and ones, and they've been parsed in a way in different languages to translate and mean different things.
Not necessarily.
No?
What would you express to myself in answer to how do you generate a new word? How does a new word become accepted?
Wow. Well, there's the slang words that just happen to kind of organically grow out of certain areas and then be repeated and repeated and repeated and picked up on, and maybe a viral share will go out. That's one way. Other ways would be in, you know, medical or intellectual terms. They take historical words from Latin or some of the early languages and combine roots and prefixes and different things. So,
what you do is you invent a new word. And you assign a meaning to it, and you use it, and you continue to use it. And as you use it, other individuals begin using it. And when other individuals begin using it, just as your energy knows no boundaries and is expressed and ripples out throughout your world, your language does also to a great extent.
Yeah.
And in that, when you create a new word and you begin to use it, you assign it a meaning and you begin actually engaging that word, that ripples out also.
Kind of like you.
And more quickly than you realize, it becomes accepted. And I would express that within this previous 50 of your years, you have added more words to your vocabulary than you have in the previous 500.
That's interesting. Even actually, that's a great example. Your word, or your Oscar Wilde's word of dude, you know, I read about that a few weeks back, and it's such a prolific word now, and I had no idea that it came from Oscar Wilde. Just kind of what I read was somebody, it was the combination of duds, meaning clothing, and attitude coming together as dude. I don't know if that's accurate, but that word is so prolific now. I use it constantly. So many people do in so many different ways.
That is how you create a new word. And in that, your language is in great need of many new words to accommodate what you know.
Interesting. Well, in the final moments of our session here, I did have a couple things that, again, tying up loose ends, I wanted to ask some things that I've never really asked about. But speaking of Oscar Wilde, I've read, through the sessions, it looks like Oscar obviously was a focus of yours, quite famous. Beethoven as well, a focus of yours. Leonardo,
yes.
And was Leonardo da Vinci also a focus of yours?
No.
No? Because that was the one that I had an issue or a question about. But you were kind of around or associated with Leonardo as another focus, potentially?
Yes.
And
yes.
Leonardo in particular has always captured, there's some kind of resonance there for me, so I wanted to talk about that. When I first heard about him or learned about him as a teenager, I was just really impressed with the Renaissance aspect, and I'm curious about a lot of things. I'm interested in a lot of things. So was he, but it just seemed to me like a really cool model of how to be. I was wondering, besides that, is there any other connection between Leonardo da Vinci and myself or you?
I would express that you are an observing essence of that individual, and you do interpret a focus in that time framework.
All right, perfect. And I see we're out of time, so I want to be very mindful of Mary and her time. But I just want to say thank you again for taking the time to chat and help us widen our awareness here. Help me specifically.
You are very welcome, my friends. I express to you my invitation to engage conversation again, perhaps in not such a lengthy dot framework.
Well, I would love to do that because there's a lot of questions I still have, and this is very, very helpful for me. So thank you very much.
Excellent. I express tremendous encouragement to you, my friend, and an acknowledgement that you are accomplishing and expanding. And I would express a tremendous affection to you. Until our next meeting, my dear friend, au revoir.
Au revoir, Elias. Thank you.
Hello.
Hey, welcome back. So, that was all very helpful, very useful, as always, with the old friend. He did say at the end, I thanked him, and he said that he would encourage me to speak again not so long. It's been about 15 months, and so, I was like, okay, you're trying to set appointments for Mary here. I'll talk to her about it, but but if I ping you in a couple of months,
okay with me.
All right, perfect. And I appreciate that because I know this is taxing on you, and I've often throughout the 14 years or so I've been hesitant to kind of want to do a session just for the sake of doing a session, because I figure if we're going to do this and if you're going to take a bullet for the team, as we've said before, I want to make sure it's valuable and meaningful time.
Well, what I would say to you is to trust that I know what I'm doing.
Perfect.
And don't worry about it.
All right. So I'll ping you in probably a month or so, and maybe we'll set up. And I'm perfectly willing to kind of slip into some of your openings.
Okay.
I don't want to be the third session or anything. I don't want you to stress at all. So yes, definitely you can tell me, sorry, dude, not now, but maybe another time.
Okay.
So I'll go ahead and I'll send off the...
I'm getting good at that.
Perfect. Good. We'll get the check out. And I'd love to see the picture too. So if you get a picture of your guinea pig thing...
Oh, yeah, I'll send you.
Go ahead and email it to
okay.
me. All right, Mary, thanks.
All right, you have a great day.
You too. Take care.
Okay, bye.
Bye. So, there you go. Talking to the dead guy. Good friend from somewhere, I guess, beyond. See ya.